Welcome back to this bonus episode of the EMJ podcast. I am Dr. Hannah Moyer, Senior Medical Writer and Moderator for EMJ. Today's episode is part of a series entitled The Current Status of Anti-TNF Therapies for Inflammatory Bowel Disease. This podcast series has been supported by Viatris. Again, I'm welcoming back our two experts in the field of gastroenterology who are sharing their expertise and personal experiences of working with those living with inflammatory bowel disease. First up, we have Dr. Yamila Zabana, a gastroenterologist at the Hospital Universitaria Mutara Terrassa, which is affiliated with the University of Barcelona in Spain. And I am also joined by Shubha Bhatt, a clinical pharmacist in the Digestive Disease Institute at the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio, USA. Thank you very much for coming back and joining me for this episode with EMJ. In this final episode, we're going to focus deeply into considering the role of therapeutic drug monitoring for anti-TNF therapy, as well as patients who are refractory to anti-TNFs. In our previous episodes, we've mentioned a lot about therapeutic drug monitoring, and it's clearly an important topic of interest to our panelists. And we've seen that it's not necessarily mentioned a lot in the guidelines. So let's take a bit of a deeper dive into the importance of therapeutic drug monitoring and the current perspectives. Yamila, if I could come to you first, could you just recap what the current perspectives on TDM is for patients on anti-TNF? And as a gastroenterologist, do you currently employ monitoring? Are there any barriers that we're seeing?
So it depends on the experience, Hannah. For example, in Spain, many centers, they are not only using TDM, but even pharmacodynamic models in order to tailor the dose of biologics in a personalized manner. Actually, in some hospitals, the physicians of the floor only ask for the drug, and it's the clinical pharmacist that decide using the model what's the best dose for the patient. So, but this is not the norm everywhere. I mean, I can say that in Spain we are believers or not believers of the TDM. So taking this fact into account, the Spanish IBD group, GTECU, just released just last week our position and document of this aspect, trying to address the evidence and the controversies of the tool. And not only the tool, but the assessment of levels in order to tailor your decisions, because this is the main thing. It's not only trying to look at the levels of the drug, but trying to decide with these levels of the drug what to do with the drug and with the patient. And this, more or less, it's related to this new way of treating our patients, that is the treat to target. So this means that if we are not reaching to a certain point or a certain target, and the target can be the drug level, we have to increase the dose or change our treatment, like the combination therapy. We can change from thioperine to methotrexate in order to increase the drugs levels. And this is only taking the drug level as a target. So as a summary, it depends. So there are a lot of barriers. And the first one will be that you're not used to using it. So making the position document, we saw that not everyone was aware of what this means and what is this useful to. So I don't know whether you are using the same thing in the United States, Shubha, because for us, this is something kind of a new thing.
Yeah, so same thing, Amelia, in terms of like the TDM, it's really variable in practice too. So the gastroenterologist I work with, I think I'm more like reactive monitoring just because they know the evidence that's there and like they can confidently know that the level will correlate with like the symptom if that's what's happening. But the proactive is still like a hit or a miss. So some people are strong believers in that, others not so much. But if we do proactive TDM, then we'll actually check the level at week 6 and 14, so closer in the induction to try to optimize their outcomes. Mm-hmm. And then again, maybe like 3 to 4 doses if we do like a dosing change, just to make sure that dosing change is on target. So same thing, definitely a lot of variations here. And then I would just like to highlight some other strategies that we're using for TNF monitoring. So we also will check like a fecal calprotectin. I know we haven't really talked about that too much in the podcast, but that is basically a abdominal test that can check to see the level of inflammation. So it looks to see how much of the neutrophils are shed into the stool. Not always a reliable marker, I've learned. It's not, so you'll have to maybe coincide it with colonoscopies or imaging to make sure that it's something that we can actually use for patients. But we'll typically check that around 3 months of treatment and then repeat imaging and scope in about 6 months after treatment initiation to determine efficacy. But in the meantime, we should be monitoring for clinical improvement and remission. And treatment adherence is also really important because we know that if you're not adherent to treatment, that can actually increase the risk for anti-drug antibody formation with anti-TNF therapy. So always making sure that the patients are scheduled or they're doing their injections correctly on time. And then Yamili had also mentioned a great another marker that we're actually not commonly utilizing in the state, but I'm curious to see if this might be a marker potentially down the line, but that's the HLA-DQA1 *05 allele. So that actually shown in the PAN study that it increases the risk for immunogenicity. And so, again, we know that it can actually increase the risk for treatment failure. And so in this setting, we might want to maybe consider combination therapy or proactive drug monitoring or use like an entirely different medication that has a different mechanism of action. From a pharmacokinetic standpoint, we also pay a lot of attention to albumin. We know that this is instrumental for drug binding, so especially we want to make sure that patients that have low albumin, we're keeping a closer eye on them because they're going to have more likely of a rapid metabolism of the treatment, and so they're probably going to benefit from a dosing escalation. So yeah, a lot of parameters that goes into monitoring for these medicines and making sure that they're effective and safe. And then I would like to add one more point that we also utilize the same monitoring parameters and biomarkers that we discussed for biosimilars. So again, going back to the point that there's a lot of these medicines are essentially the same molecule. And so even the drug level assays have also been like a question of concern. And we'll use those same drug level assays as well for the biosimilars.
You know, actually, last few days ago in ECHO, a Spanish researcher, Jordi Guardiola, present the evidence about this allele in those patients using ustekinumab. And he showed that it was not related to the efficacy of ustekinumab. So he suggests that if the patient has the allele, we have to keep in mind that ustekinumab should be a better first option than anti-TNF. So this may change how we use biologics. This is like personalized medicine, this holy grail that we are all trying to find. So
yeah, hopefully we'll, you know, taking on board these monitoring approaches, helping us to tailor our dosage, treat to target is crucial. I think what's important to follow on from this discussion is we're talking about monitoring treatments and treatment failure. What can be done, Yamila, if a patient does lose response to anti-TNF therapy? How would you approach this? Or if someone's a non-responder?
Yeah, as you say, Hannah, there are two different ways of losing the response to any drug, especially to anti-TNF, and they're quite different because the first will be the primary non-response. In this case, we should change the class of biologics because it's clear that anti-TNFs will not work, not adalimumab, not infliximab, and we should treat the patient with another advanced therapy. This is the first case. And however, if we have the other case, that it will be the losing of response as a secondary, and it's especially if the patient has been in a quite long period of remission, maybe the loss of response is secondary to immunogenicity. So one should consider, first of all, confirming the situation, assessing the levels of the drug and their antibiotics, and then trying to switch to concomitant immunomodulator. I mean, you can switch to another anti-TNF, or you can switch to another anti-TNF and use immunomodulators in order to decrease the immunogenicity. There is also the possibility to change within, as I said, anti-TNF to adalimumab to infliximab if the patient has performed a good response. But you can have like a complete incomplete response will be like the loss of secondary response, but actually the patient has not response at all, completely correct. And sometimes the case is that the dose of the drug is not as proper to the patient. So maybe in this kind of patients that have a response, but the response has been incomplete, maybe trying to improve the dosing should be better than beginning to think about changing the drug. So maybe TDM in these patients can be considered.
And finally, Shubha, as we're looking forward to the future and thinking about the treatment options and the personalized approach for individuals, have you seen any alternative therapies coming forward, or what do you see as the future trends in advancing the management of IBD?
So I think there's a few things on the horizon, actually. So we'd like to first emphasize precision medicine, and that's definitely a hot topic. It's really interesting that not all of our patients have the same therapeutic response outcome to treatment duration. So we're really interested in trying to identify predictive factors so that we can actually determine what the best treatment option for our patients are, and more importantly, when would be the right time to utilize that treatment. So far, we have identified certain genetic alleles and patient characteristics. So again, that's like low albumin, obesity. We know that that can affect anti-TNF clearance and subsequent effects. But again, there's still more work to be done. And I think another area of growing interest is actually the microbiome space. We're actually seeing some preliminary studies that the microbiome can actually influence response to anti-TNF therapy. So definitely looking more into, kind of as we talk about precision medicine, doing a deeper dive into the microbiome and further figuring out what's happening in that space and how we can utilize it to our advantage to better care for our patients. And then I think one other thing that we haven't really talked about so much in the podcast series, but there's a big interest from patients about treatment de-escalation, once especially they're in remission. So that is another area where we're kind of focusing on at what point when we get these patients in remission, would it be safe to like de-escalate therapy or like completely like extend intervals? So there's a lot of interest around in that space. And then I think, at least in the U.S., although biosimilars have been well received and utilized in Europe, we're still navigating that landscape in the United States because we have a different pharmaceutical coverage system here. So we're very interested in seeing how the biosimilar space will play out in IBD care here within the States.
So there's a lot of exciting things to come going forward, and maybe we'll see changes to practice around the implementation of therapeutic drug monitoring. We'll just have to watch this space. I think the key thing is we're starting to see, or we're seeing more and more around trying to tailor treatments, looking at that personalized approach, like you mentioned, the precision medicine and all of these key characteristics that are influencing the way the IBD treatment is evolving and how patients are responding. But unfortunately, that is all we have time for today. This is our last of our episodes as part of our series, which was on the current status of anti-TNF therapies for inflammatory bowel disease. So I'd just like to thank my guests, Dr. Yamila Zabana and Dr. Shubha Bhatt, for joining me today and sharing their insights. And if you enjoyed this episode of the EMJ podcast, this is the last in our series, so you can go back and look at the others, which can be accessed through your preferred podcast platform or by visiting emjreviews.com. So I hope you can take some time to look at those. So until next time, take care and goodbye for now.